ready to talk about video games because it's the Eternal Beta Podcast, episode 73 for Tuesday, the
2nd.
Tuesday, the 2nd of November. Good with the dates there. I am Steve Audiochron, and with me tonight is Raindance AU, aka George.
Good evening.
And the Evil Comic Dictator, aka TV Dave.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
It's a regular crew episode tonight on the Eternal Beta Podcast. So many games. It's happening.
It's that season.
Yeah, we're right in the middle of it. We missed last week's episode, unfortunately, because of scheduling difficulties. But we're still here.
We weren't all off playing PUBG.
Yeah, no, we weren't. Some of our members who keep missing episodes because they're in Valheim each week when we do the podcasts. Who will remain nameless.
Well, if you want to, just hop in the Discord and you can find out who they are.
That's true. You can join the Discord. Do we have a page for it, Dave, or we just have a link in the show notes?
Well, I think there's just a link in the show notes, yeah.
We do. We also have a website, eternalbetapodcast.com, if you want to ask us questions. So, without any further ado, I have a giant list of games because...
System status
this week. George, you are one of the few members on my level now, or I'm on your level of OLED ownership.
Yes, it's quite a transformative thing,
isn't it? Glorious.
Yes.
We can lord this fact over everyone else.
It gives a new lease on life on your old games. You want to see what they look like.
I'm absolutely shattered my expectations of what it would be like to use an OLED screen on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
Just for everything, just to look at.
Yes.
Yeah. If you ever experienced an OLED, probably if they've had a recent phone, the last few years, most of the screens are AMOLEDs.
I've had an OLED Google Pixel for the last 5 years. And I think I've had an OLED before that. Maybe Galaxy Nexus was OLED.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some VR headsets. Yeah, exactly. Odyssey.
But
Samsung. Yeah, Switch OLED model.
To have it as your primary display and to have it at a significant size, it's something.
It's unbelievable. I'm blown away, and I highly recommend that people with the right circumstances for owning an OLED, because there's a few things that you need to be aware of and take care of when using it as a monitor.
Yes.
Or our limitations on it as using it as a monitor to be aware of. So if you can swing it and if it suits your room, then, man, I've not had this much fun playing video games in my life. And I mean from all the way from emulating old games, which is particularly awesome, especially old arcade games or console games. If you're into emulators and things, that's fantastic. All the way through to latest HDR kind of titles. And everything in between is just it's just mind blowing.
I'm in.
Do you mean issues having burn in for plasma? Is that what you have to watch out for? Or
100%. It is. Yes. Burn in is allegedly a thing. Though every iteration of technology, they say they've improved their anti burn in tech. I guess Steve and I are in for a discovery to see if that's the case. We have different models from different companies, but the panel itself is identical between our monitors.
So there's an automatic brightness limiter that will limit the maximum brightness of the screen for a particular size of brightness. So if you had a full white screen, it could only get so bright. But if you shrink that brightness down, you only have a 2% section of the screen, then it could get heaps brighter for that little section. So in regular content, you know, not everything's really bright, like just little highlights are bright here and there and whatever, and they look significantly intense, especially in a HDR title. But if you're trying to get you're in a bright, sunny room or something, you know, you've got a lot of ambient light, you've got lights on all the time, like, and you want to have a bright screen, some people are weird like that, then that can be a limiting factor.
I tell you what, today when I was driving in Dirt Rally 2 and I was driving into the sunset, there is a stage where the sun goes into your eyes, and it's always been, you know, bright and difficult to see when just like in real life. Today, when I experienced it, it was the brightest thing I've ever seen while driving a sim. It was intense. I could not believe what happened.
Does Dirt Rally 2 support HDR, or is that just...
No, it doesn't. It's quite a remarkable thing that I'm experiencing where,
You're not on Windows 11 yet either, are you?
No.
Okay, so that's another thing to talk about, which is the auto HDR functionality of Windows 11. But Dave, back to your question. It's that the burn-in is a risk, but it seems like the last couple of years, at least, like the last 2 to 3 years, that seems to have been mitigated substantially. Whether it's like ruled out, I can't really speak to, but like it seems like that's not really an issue anymore for most people.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So mine's the LG C1 48-inch model, and George, you got the Gigabyte.
Yep, Aorus FO 48U. It's same size.
Yeah. So yours has a KVM in it, and it has some pretty powerful speakers, I believe.
Oh, the speakers are right. Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously a DisplayPort connection.
Yep, DisplayPort and electronics that can do things like picture by picture, which I definitely appreciate. It's something I actually use, and that's something I actually need when I work from home. So I saw that I've been using it with my previous monitor, my 32x9, and yeah, that's basically what told me I needed to get this one over the C1, which I was looking at for a while, thinking that was what I was going to get. But then when I saw that this will support my normal way of working, I thought, well, this is what I have to get.
Yeah, it's time. Yeah. There's not really any other options really outside of these two at the moment anyway.
Yeah.
But
I was picking between the two, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, like in the new year at CES, we'll probably see a few more like 42-inch and maybe smaller models, but also rival like, you know, mini LED models that might be really worth looking at as well. So next year is going to hot up a lot, but for the early adopters among us, it's like, yeah, anyway, it's something you can't really like rave on about too much because it's a visual thing and you need to like see it to believe it. But in terms from my experience, like I just have never felt so like connected into playing and absorbed by playing games. Now, some of that could also be the fact that I've been locked on 60 hertz, 1440p ultra wide for a fair few years now. So the jump to 48 inches HDR and 120 hertz VRR as well, yeah, all working at the same time. It is quite the experience of it's a massive difference. I can't understate it. Like it's just so massive. So having said that, I ran through like just like every single type of game I could get my hand on, and all of a sudden I've become like fully back into just playing anything at any moment that anyone wants to play, or just on my own. So yeah, we should talk about them. But first of all, Dave, you've got some limited time tonight, so we might cover what you've got on your list there.
Oh, thank you. I've gone sail crazy.
Sail crazy.
Sail crazy.
Spend all the money.
I know. Steam has had their Halloween sale, So I managed to pick up Iron Harvest 1920 and They Are Billions on the Halloween sale. And I'll put out there a note that for people who like Stardew Valley, if you want a non-relationship version of that, Graveyard Keeper is currently on sale for $5.
Yeah, right. Nice.
I also finished up playing House of the Dying Sun. Nice little space shootery arcadey thing. And I went and purchased Metal Gear Solid on GOG, the PC version. So now I have a legitimate version when I go to emulate it on a PSP.
Yes, that you can rip to your PSP.
That's exactly how emulation works, I understand, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, Iron Harvest. I totally thought this would be up your alley. It's a, what is it, kind of like a steampunky RTS, maybe?
Yep, so a steampunky like Company of Heroes RTS, so...
It's literally the same engine, right?
I'm not sure about the engine, but that wouldn't surprise me.
Pretty sure it is. I think it's even the same developer.
It mentions Poland quite a lot, so I think it's a Polish
licensed developer version of the engine, maybe.
Look, I mean, I had misgivings about both of these, and I think it must have caught me at the right time. And I don't particularly like Company of Heroes. I find that style of RTS really tedious and dull.
Right, the kind of like story told while kind of moving a little group of dudes around.
Well, having everything focused on your positioning of a limited group of dudes on the battlefield as opposed to resource gathering, army building slash defending, and then smashing.
Yeah.
They get around that by having the cap really low. And, like, I spent maybe about an hour on the first mission, like, the first proper mission in Iron Harvest. And, like, it just was like, this is not interesting. I want the action. I want the fun. Can I get some progression, get some, you know.
Yeah, you want to unlock a tree of things and.
Or I want to feel like I've done something. I've knocked out a customize. Bit of this and this actually means something. Whereas actually it doesn't mean anything apart from it's another objective done.
Yeah, cool. And so you're not enjoying it now, or are you kind of okay with it?
I said to myself I'd play it for 2 hours and then that way I'd keep the refund option, but I've gone past the 2 hour limit now. So I'll just play through it and see how I go. I think it's probably unfair to only play the little bit like I have and start complaining, but I feel that I'm going to be right.
Oh, we're critics. That's the whole point, right?
Well, I seem to be very critical of everything recently, so I've got that in mind that I'm just generally cranky.
Yeah, I had a quick check. It's got nothing to do with Company of Heroes. It's just similar.
Right. Oh, it's very clearly inspired by, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, my brother is a massive fan of Company of Heroes, and what was the other one? The old Commandos ones was that even?
Not quite. There's another one that's like it. Men at War.
Men at War.
The other one, yeah.
Yeah, those type of ones where you kind of got your little dudes. Yes, and I mean I liked them when I was a bit younger as well. Some of the predecessors to this sort of thing, but in terms of RTS, like it's a genre that was so popular when we were growing up, at least, and PC was kind of in its prime for a while there, and it kind of died off for a while.
And then Dota happened.
Yeah, Dota happened. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a big, saw it happening.
There was a big glut of them as well. Like, no one can remember the sequel to Zed, Zed Steel Soldiers, because it was awful.
I remember Zed, but I didn't remember it was a sequel.
And then, like, Command & Conquer Generals, and it kind of went to that weird 3D.
Look, Generals kind of is perfectly fine. Like, Red Alert 3 is fine. Generals is fine. The problem is Command & Conquer 4. That's your problem.
4, that's the one. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
There was the Aussie-developed KKND, Crush, Kill, and Destroy.
And KKND 2.
Yep. KKND 2, yeah. And
I remember Dark Reign.
I was just about to say that on Dark Reign. Yeah.
And Dark Reign 2 and Total Annihilation and SubCom Forged Alliance. Yep.
Yeah. So RTS, are they making a comeback?
I assume we'll get to that later, Steve. We'll tell us all about how Age of Empires 4 is going.
Ah, yes, indeed. Well, I would talk about it now, except I would probably have a bit to say, but they are billions. Let's move on to the next one.
So you kind of want, it's almost a real-time strategy,
right?
You mix a real-time strategy with like a base building And you kind of get they are billions, except for the fact that it plays on Iron Man mode for the whole campaign.
Right.
So what I mean is, like, basically, normally at the end of most maps, you just get the horde will come in and you'll have to defend what you've built. And you can be playing for an hour, hour and a half or so, and then just have it all smashed in your face because you didn't have enough troops. It's very frustrating to play in that way. Very, very frustrating to play. But, They Are Billions is sort of two separate games. You got the campaign by itself. Then you also have the... It's essentially just a random map maker mode, and you have custom maps in the same vein.
Cool.
And that's the main reason why I bought it. I want to play the custom maps and the random map maker mode because they seem to be the fun parts of it, whereas the campaign has, it can get real frustrating at times.
So it's steampunk but also post-apocalyptic. That's a combo.
Oh, I wouldn't say a little bit steampunk. There is some steampunk influences in it, some units that are definitely steampunk, but it's, you're against zombies. You got guns and bows and arrows and sniper rifles and mechs.
So are we talking like, is there a tower defense to it or is it like units
that are defending? It's kind of tower defense, yeah, in that you'll build your base with the tower defense kind of in mind, and so... Mm-hmm. Maybe two or three times or more, depending on the mission, a wave of zombies will come from a random direction. So you'll have to have that walled up and somehow blockaded off.
Yep.
And it's not really... Normally they just go straight for your command center, so you can't really build a maze per se because they'll just want to smash through it.
Yeah, this is similar in a way to Riftbreaker. So like Riftbreaker is kind of like that where it's... resource gathering, base building, tower defense, but then there's these swarms that will just like attack at certain points in the level. Sounds quite similar.
Yeah, very familiar. Yeah, very, very similar indeed. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, cool. They Are Billions. And that's been out for a while there, right?
That's been out for quite a long time. Yeah. I mean, the people who really like They Are Billions, the developer is working on either a sequel or an expansion pack, and they won't say. But nice it kind of came out of nowhere. So it was a nice. Enough concept. As I said, the campaign in execution is a little bit rough, but I got it in the end.
Is it over 2 hours played?
Oh, very much so, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, good. It's nice to hear you hanging on to some of the games that you buy.
Well, I mean, I previously refunded something else, I entirely forget now, and it just was, I'm just...
Hey, if they don't fit the bill, you know, that's what it's there for.
Yeah.
And then you had House of the Dying Sun, which is a great song.
Whisper bought this one for me, and I finally pulled my finger out and played it. It's a sort of a roguelite space arcade space shooter. So think Wing Commander meets any of your roguelites where you have a path to follow. You'll hop in there, you'll fly around with your controller, you'll do whatever missions there are, you'll unlock something else on the next spoke of your trip. You've got to kill the 12 evil people who have usurped the crown. Mm-hmm. And then you can go through and do it at a high difficulty if you like. And it's not a hugely long game. So I finished it in about 2-3 hours. And I did most missions on the medium difficulty. So, I mean, I could double that up and finish up everything. But I thought, no, I'm all right. I've had it. I don't need to go through it again for high difficulties.
But so it's not a rogue light in the sense of unlocking... a tree of additional powers.
There is a tree of additional powers, and they do stick with you, but you don't actually lose progress if you die. So it's a bit of roguelite's a misnomer, but when you look at how the game exactly plays out, you say, oh, this is essentially the person who designed this had roguelites on their mind.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but that's been me, yes.
Yeah. Oh, and so Metal Gear Solid, was that only just released on GOG?
No, that's been around. It was on sale. It was on a special sale, and I went and picked that up. I'd seen it around a couple of times. I think there was a sale when it came onto Steam, and it is the PC version, so it doesn't have things like Psycho Mantis, where you have to change the memory card into the other slot. And there is another boss, I think, where there's some sort of vibrating controller mechanic. I don't quite remember it off the top of my head. That's excluded as well. But it's the same game, essentially, and you can play it in a slightly higher definition as well.
Mm, and it has VR missions, apparently, on GOG.
Yeah, all the extra, the stuff that came on the extra discs the 100 VR missions or whatever it was, 1,000 VR missions, something crazy.
1,000 VR missions.
That was an expansion pack, actually.
Yeah, this is crazy. I mean, who knows who actually done them, but I don't. I don't know anybody. Maybe Mike. Come on and tell us how you did it. But anyway.
He's too busy playing Valheim. Release date of September 25, 2000. How were their VR missions? When did these VR missions get created?
No, they're titled VR missions.
Yeah, right. Because you're actual... the character is in a virtual reality environment. You don't do VR.
Damn.
The VR missions were released for PlayStation 1 as an expansion pack.
Gotcha. Yeah, cool. Yeah, nice. Metal Gear Solid. Yeah,
I might even have the original disc somewhere.
Are you guys into the series? Like, because it's one of those ones where I've been tempted a few times. I think I've got a couple of them installed on my Xbox, and I've never been a Metal Gear Solid guy.
I've played Metal Gear Solid, Metal Gear Solid 2. I finished Metal Gear Solid 3. And I'd like to play... I own 5, but I've never played it. I'd like to play 4. They're great. They're immense fun.
I'm about a third of the way through 5, and it's just so silly. And a little, the missions are a little bit convoluted for my liking, so I'm having trouble getting through it.
5 is supposed to be a bit out there, even for a Metal Gear game.
Everything's entirely silly. I entirely appreciate that. Yeah. It's more like they give you 500 weapons to use, but only like 3 of them are effective.
Yeah. I mean, it's Kojima, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
At Konami?
Yeah.
No, not at Konami anymore. I mean,
Kojima's Konami swan song.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, before he kind of moved on. But yeah, I think maybe it's because Splinter Cell filled that void on the Xbox side.
I never touched Splinter Cell. Why.
But with a more serious kind of tone than it seems like Metal Gear has. All I know about Metal Gear is that there's really long cutscenes. Would that be accurate?
In the other ones, in the earlier ones, in Solid and Solid 2, I think the cutscenes are quite long. In 5, it's not too bad.
Yep. Yeah, cool.
But, are chased down a canyon by a massive mech, and there's one where there's a car chase, and you're on fire for some reason. There's a burning man, and you go, okay, this is odd.
Nice. Well, I know 2 and 3 are on Games Pass, or were Games with Gold at one point or something, because somehow I have them installed on my Xboxes.
I'd say just play 3. Start with 3. It's pretty damn epic.
Saikido?
Yeah. And it's chronologically the first game.
Ah, good. That's what I want to know.
It's prequel of all of them.
Yeah. I like doing that. I like doing stuff like that. Like playing,
is it,
playing
is it the
games.
Prequel, though, of Metal Gear on the NES?
Yes. Takes place way before that. Way before that.
It's not confusing at all. Don't bother looking at the timeline.
No. I've got the release timeline here. So Metal Gear was 87, and I believe I have that in my emulator stack somewhere. Cool. Sweet. Well, that sounds pretty good, Dave. That's like a fair little haul you got going.
Actually done something.
There's a couple other titles. You haven't been around for multiplayer nights lately. You've been busy.
I missed out on Monday. I played the one before we killed the boss up on the mountain on Valheim.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I don't think anyone did anything this week on Monday other than play Valheim maybe. But, I kind of want to get a retro. So I'm quite into this emulation stuff at the moment, and I've been playing with Parsec. Have you guys heard of Parsec?
No.
It's
like a low latency streaming service for revolving around games. I'm keen to give that a go. If anyone wants to try something, they don't need to have the game, but they can remotely, local co-op play, kind of the same way Steam does it, I suppose. But
that's what I was going to say, right? Like Steam, you're not talking about net play over a Hamachi link between two persons' computers on SNES 9X or something.
No, that's what I want to do though. So this is what this can do is like just whatever you want to feed it, you can stream, and it can handle the, you know, inputs from the remote player via web or via the, or that they can download the Parsec client if they want to the host running Parsec and with whatever application they want. So yeah, I'd probably be, you know, RetroArch or whatever, to load up a title and bust some, you know, Barkley Shut Up and Jam or
Super some, Smash TV or some, yeah, Sonic and Knuckles.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. So if any, whenever you're up for that, hit me up. I'm down to give it a go and see what the service is like. One of the basketball podcasts that I listen to, they do that quite often to play all the old retro titles because there's no real other way to kind of do that. So that's how I kind of heard about it. So I'm keen to give that a go. Yeah. Moving on. I suppose George, do we want to break down Ghost Recon Breakpoint? Yeah, this is quite a all kind of old title now.
So yeah, it's it'd be 2 years old, I think.
Yeah.
Because I seem to recall when I first joined Twitch, the demo hit, and a lot of people I knew on Twitch were, you know, streaming the demo and stuff, and I tried the beta. Yep. And
we've talked about it on here, yeah.
And yeah, I did not like what I was seeing, so I never touched it. But it was actually the Epic Game Store had their Halloween sale, I think. And I saw it for, you know, quite a reasonable price, and I thought, what the hell? For this price, I'll buy it. Because I actually did.
How cheap?
$22.
Okay.
$22. And I actually enjoyed. I enjoyed myself to an extent, and I thought I probably will get $22 worth of entertainment out of this. And I was looking for something, you know, with modern, realistic weaponry to run around and shoot on a more relaxed basis. It turns out that this is another one of those stories where the developers took on board all of the negative feedback and turned something around, because I tell you, all of the things that I disliked, they seemingly have addressed over time. Plus, in a couple of days, they're releasing an entirely new single-player campaign mode or co-op campaign mode, which makes Breakpoint play like Wildlands. The same conquest type of the entirety of a map. So you've basically now, and it's free, it's a free update, and basically there's two campaigns to play through, two different game modes that are going to exist. So yeah, I even snuck in a little bit of co-op time, and I'm blown away. It's really good. They did that rare thing of setting up a game that gives you enough options. So if you want to be absolute hardcore, you can make it a hardcore. If you want something that's a little bit more, how can I put it, gamey, so you can go opposite ends of a spectrum, and you can tailor it so you get the exact experience you want. So I'm very, very impressed.
The problem I have with these is like none of them feel like Tom Clancy at all. Like, they don't have any Tom Clancy-ness about them anymore. It just feels like they slapped the name onto, you know, these generic army story things.
Wait till you see the TV shows, mate. It's worse. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, the name Tom Clancy has been just splashed over everything. I just sort of ignore it, and I just look at, you know, what am I going to get out of this? I don't go in. I'm not going in expecting Clancy something, you know, like Rainbow Six. Rainbow Six is not Rainbow Six anymore, but it's still wildly popular, and
this is what I'm getting at. Yeah.
So it's called Ghost Recon Breakpoint. Like, I was a fan of the very first Ghost Recon. I ran one of the only Ghost Recon servers in Australia in the day. Some of the best experiences, multiplayer experiences I ever had, were in the original Ghost Recon, which couldn't be further from what this is. But this is enjoyable.
Yeah. So Breakpoint, because I think I was thinking of Wildlands when I was thinking about how it seemed like something I did not want to play ever. But then Breakpoint, now I'm having trouble kind of figuring out exactly why it's different. Can you compare them?
It's a success. It's a Wildlands. So
okay.
But
had a different style of play than
They made some changes to it. You know, the things that people liked about Wildlands, they stripped.
So they made it worse.
and they also introduced a gear based system, just like The Division. And people were like, hang on, this is Ghost Recon. I want a gun to be a gun. I don't want it to be a rare or an epic or a legendary. I don't want to be looting. This is Ghost Recon. But you can actually disable that entirely. This is what I mean. Like, you can go the full hardcore, you know, Ghost Recon, immersive sim, or you can play it like an MMO Lite, and everything in between. So I think it's wonderful.
Cool. And then the additional, is this the Operation Motherlands that you're referring to?
Yeah, Operation Motherland.
So that's dropping pretty soon.
Exactly. And I didn't know about Operation Motherland when I bought it. I just thought, you know what? It's a massive map. It gives you the Far Cry sort of base rating with lots of guns, but a much better gun system, much better weapon system than Far Cry. Much more in-depth vehicle system. And without the random wildlife attacking you while you're plotting your attack on an outpost. It has drop in, drop out co-op. I was like, yeah, this is my kind of thing.
That's an advantage. That is a massive advantage.
Yeah.
To me wanting to play something like that for sure. This is my issue at the moment, is that I'm just having a lot of trouble getting anyone to play anything.
Yeah, that is a massive problem.
Yeah, more than once. Anyway, put it that way. So it's like, cool, we can get on and we can start a game, or we can play the first, you know, kind of 15 minutes or something. And then I'm like, cool, well, it's a couple of days later. Like, let's go again. And then it's just, yeah. No one turns up, or they're not available, or life gets in the way and that sort of thing. So, yeah, not judging anyone or anything. It's just like, just really keen to do some of these co-op experiences, because it's so fun to play with other people. But anyway, such is life. Cool. Well, and that was Wildlands/Breakpoint. Everspace. Let's talk Everspace.
Yeah, so I played that quite a few months ago. Put it on pause, tried it again in VR.
Yes.
Loved that. Put it on pause again. And I think OLED is the best way I've experienced Everspace. I think
I have the exact same opinions as you so far.
I really feel like space titles are amazing on OLED. They're just mind blowing. So I'm thinking, the Mass Effect remastered series is in my near future. That kind of thing. Oh my god!
Tried that out. Yeah, 100%. Man, I have to echo it. And sorry to everyone else about us gushing about this, but honestly, it is seriously the biggest upgrade in my gaming life. I think I'm happy to say that. Like, VR was a huge kind of step up and a change in the way you experience games, but in terms of just raw sex appeal. Like the OLED is just, yeah, just destroys
everything. Really? It's crazy.
Yeah,
really.
It's just so, so good. So Everspace specifically though, like I haven't gone back to one, but I have been playing two, which is on
two
Game Pass now.
Fully released or is it early access?
It's still what they call, an early access on Game Pass. They put as game preview. So there is an annoying banner that's like game preview that pops up on a lot of the screens.
Right.
I'm not sure why, because like quite clearly anyone who plays the game would know, you know, they would know it's in early access. They need to be reminded while in the game. Do you want to talk about one or?
Well, whatever. Like for me, I just had one installed and it was easier for me just to load up one than to install two. Two looks good, but if it's in early access, I sort of want to wait for it to be fully released before I play it as well.
I think the first one also did early access for ages too,
yes,
didn't it?
Correct. I bought it when it was out of early access already. Yeah.
So this is Everspace being a roguelite.
But Everspace 2 was
spaceship game. Well, Everspace 2 is kind of, but like it's more of a, so far it seems, and I've only put a few hours in, it seems like more of a linear storyline driven thing. But I don't know if there's different modes that I haven't kind of, you know, tried.
I heard they completely dropped the roguelite for Everspace 2. That's what I heard.
Yeah. Like you still have like a bit of freedom within the story. Like, okay, you've got to like go to this place, that place, this place. And when you're there, like the way that plays out can be different. And if you die, like you need to redo that one again, but you could also just go off and do a different one if you want, that kind of thing. So, and then you do get that kind of like companions that you can sink points into to get certain technologies or unlocks or features or, you know, your bumper button powers kind of thing via companions, but also like the whole resource thing of like going into a system and cleaning off, you know, rocks off a asteroid or crystals or whatever and picking up stuff out of wrecks and all that sort of thing and kind of selling those resources or upgrading your ship with them. It's quite enjoyable, that loop. But in two there's the story element and there's some really nice cool cell shaded kind of artwork and stuff that moves it along.
Yeah, cool.
The space game OLED thing, killer.
Yeah. Just completely
so great. Nice. Like you're looking through the universe. The other thing I was gonna say about like space games on like think Contra or something like side scrollery. And I'm thinking of Metroid at the moment, like Super Metroid specifically I've been playing. And just anything on an old console, like you think of how often they would just like fade to black or do anything like that. I'm just kind of getting transported back in time to like, you know, the TVs that we had back then with those consoles in the 90s, about how they would feel and how they would look. And like with this type of screen, you can kind of get very close to the feeling of what those felt like in terms of the way the artwork looked and the dynamics that they had, let alone the motion stuff and all that.
I haven't really gone back to anything from that era, but it'll be interesting to do so.
Yeah, even if it's a PC game that's from, the 90s or so, and it's something where you'll notice that there's a lot of black used because it's more like empty space than it is they didn't want to like kind of color every single part of the screen necessarily all the time. Like a lot of things just sit against black backgrounds, especially at nighttime. So definitely worth checking out. That's just reminded me of that. So Everspace is something to keep an eye on. I'm quite into it. I think it's one of those things where it's check in every so often, see what's changed, see what's upgraded.
Agree.
Cool. Moving down the list, we are now to Circuit Superstars.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
I had the good fortune of getting a review copy of this. Yeah, it's very interesting. It's very much like Art of Rally, what was the one that came before that? Drift game.
But top down kind of cutesy art style kind of vibes.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, cel shaded.
Yeah,
it's just like Art of Rally, but it's for circuit. And you get a bunch of different types of circuit cars, and you got a bunch of different circuits. And just like Art of Rally, it's more sim than you expect. Wonderful little game.
Same developer or different developer?
Completely different developer. It's actually published by Square Enix.
I saw that.
It was somebody from an agency representing Square Enix who contacted me.
Nice. Are you doing written reviews or just doing stream coverage or
stream and Twitch and YouTube both tend to be stream, but I will start to be doing more video type things. Absolute awesome. Drift. Yeah. Absolute Drift is the name of that the first game.
How does this one feel?
Yeah, it feels just like Art of Rally. I got to tell you, if you hadn't told me, I would have believed that it was the same developer as Art of Rally.
It's like an alternate mode.
Feels like it. It really feels like it.
I was just saying I have to get going. Thank you very much for that, gentlemen.
It's been a pleasure. Problem at all.
Have a good night, Dave.
Thank you. You can always email us at eternalbetapodcast@gmail.com, Dave, if you have any things you'd like to
bring up in the episode when I'm not here.
Yep. Yeah, or, you know, tweet us at eternalbetapod because you're on Twitter quite often.
Indeed. I'll leave it there, gentlemen. Enjoy the system talk. Bye.
See ya. Nice. All right. Beam MG Drive. I saw you did on the Barrel Rollers, George, the inaugural BMMG Drive.
Yeah, so we are...
event?
We are now going to be doing an organized rally series using BMMG. And I was blown away. Like, I'd tried it previously and was very impressed, but trying it with the new... rig and the new direct drive wheel, it blew me away.
Are you putting sort of limitations on how people, because this game is quite the like customize your car type of one?
Yes, you have to drive a very specific car.
Okay, cool.
There's a couple of specific cars that you must choose between. There is a little bit of an honor system, but at the same time, there is a way we try to police it at the same time.
Permabans, for example.
Yeah.
there's a setup for that kind of event where you can run a series, or do you have to kind of
manipulate the game yourself? Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Yeah. So that's what makes it interesting for us. But you know, we need to run in a certain way to make it happen. And we've had a really good response. There are people who find hardcore damage mode in Dirt Rally 2 like really nasty, that they ain't seen nothing until they're in BeamNG.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
It simulates the car performance on damage
You know, a slight graze on the on a wheel can mean that the car gets extremely difficult to drive. Whereas the cars is typically a bit more resilient in Dirt Rally 2, even though some people feel like, you know, the tires feel like balloons that just pop in Dirt Rally 2, I would say Dirt Rally 2 is pretty forgiving, even with hardcore damage. BeamNG with a soft body physics shows you where it's at.
Nice. Has there been any like kind of milestone updates to it? Any? What's the reason that you've started to jump into that now? Just time, or is it come to a point where it's like right for using as a race?
I believe it's continuously had updates and upgrades. I think it's one of those games that's still in early access. I don't think it's fully released.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's like 0.23 or something, right?
Yeah. And it has a ton of mods and extensibility, and I think that's gotten us interested. And also just how hardcore it is versus Dirt Rally 2, which is our mainstay. You know, it is sort of an open question that some of the more hardcore have. It's like, how well would I do in BeamNG? If this was BeamNG, how well would I do?
That's kind of like the B League,
yeah. So,
title at the moment for you guys.
So now, well, it's the more hardcore one,
right.
Yeah. So yeah, the guys who are up for an even deeper challenge are the ones who are stepping up and going, you know what, I'll throw my hat in the ring, and see how well I can do.
Yeah, cool.
So yeah, loving it.
Nice one.
And just like you said with OLED, you know, you want to try everything else. Everything else is new. All your old stuff is new again. I've got the same experience with this new rig and the new wheel. I want to try everything again.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, for sure. So like support for that new wheel, is it?
It's got
a fairly seamless experience.
Backwards compatibility. So if you don't have native support, you flick a switch and it goes to compatibility mode. So yeah, that's one of the big draw cards of this wheel as well.
Yeah, sick. Do you lose much?
Nothing.
Kind of nothing? Yeah, in nothing. Compatibility mode. Nice. Yeah, that's great. So, yeah, the rigs all together. I saw that you've put together as well, like the four screen setup.
Yep.
There.
Quad monitor setup.
With the OLED at the center of the quad monitor setup.
Yeah, not the traditional.
Some next level shit, man.
Not the traditional triple monitor where every single monitor is in play for your display, for your driving, for your game. I've got one monitor in portrait mode. I've got a monitor that's overhead so I can monitor how my stream PC goes, and another monitor off to the right to monitor the other things that need to happen to make a stream go. So,
that's
good.
Yeah, that's cool. I've not set up, so I kind of thought that I would have my ultra wide as a portrait monitor off to the side. But partly I don't have enough desk space to do that at the moment, and also partly like I just don't need it. I've found that I've like completely adapted to the like blank canvas that is 48 inches of OLED. To the point where it's quite rare that I've got anything full screened, or if I do stretch a web page full height, like it's only kind of a temporary thing.
Yeah,
before I realize I don't need it.
Only games would I full screen really.
Mm. And there's been a few things where I've like either considered or have actually put into a widescreen resolution. And just completely forgotten about that fact once I've done it. I think the kind of the black bars being so black just disappears.
Yeah. So I run games. Well, when I stream it, I have the game at 3840x1600. So I don't have, don't do a 4K. And so that's like 21x9.
Basically. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I found that ultra demanding things, like it can be quite useful just to drop it down to that slimmer, but also not where it's demanding as an issue, more of a field of view thing.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. So like Witcher, for example, like I found that in 16:9, it was quite intense and I could kick back in my chair and kind of view that okay. But then when I put it into an ultra wide ratio, like I felt like I could sit a bit more normally in my chair, and it just was so striking.
The versatility you have with 4K and a large format display, it's really cool.
Absolutely. I'm just, there's been not a moment where I haven't sat down and just gone like, what can I do with it now? What can I, like, like I'm just still there. The smile hasn't worn off my face yet. Absolutely. So anyway, what I did was I went through an extremely, oh, am I still there?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. For some reason, things aren't reacting to my clicks. There they are now. So anyway, I've gone through and just tried a million things, but I'm just going to mention a couple of quick things first. So Skatebird, I've been mentioning my excitement of leading up to playing Skatebird for some months now. Finally got a chance to play it. Was minorly disappointed in the emulation of skating part of it, right. But was not let down by the substantial number of birds that you can select as your skater.
Okay.
And the customization that you can go through in selecting your birds. So yes, I was able to, I don't know if anyone knows this, but one of our birds died recently and we had to rehome the other one. So been missing little Alfie and Kramer, but was able to reincarnate Alfie as a cap wearing skateboarder in Skatebird, and that was quite fun. That's pretty much all I got to say about Skatebird. Back for Blood, this is a game that, you know, we've talked about a lot, but and I thought that we would be playing it a lot more than we have, but it just seems like our Discord group has just been really lax on the game passing lately. And yeah, no one's really been pumped for Left 4 Dead, Freudian slip.
Well, you said it right.
For Back 4 Blood, yeah, pretty much. Look, from what I have played, and I did go online a fair few times and played with randoms, but then I stopped because I was like, this isn't fun unless I'm talking to my mates about it and we can communicate about how we, like, why we died, and you know, organize cards together and stuff like it. Doesn't make any sense to kind of like do it with random people and like just happen to run into people that are chatty and happen to be in the same level you are about how to play the game. So yeah. So unfortunately, Back 4 Blood is just sitting there waiting.
I knew it wouldn't be a thing for me because of the way I left with Left 4 Dead 2.
The way you left?
Yeah. It just, me and the group that I was playing with, we had a great time in Left 4 Dead 1. Left 4 Dead 2, I can't pick anything wrong with it, but we just didn't have the same level of fun with it. And I think sometimes just your time with something runs up. I don't know.
Yeah.
It can be hard to recreate it.
Yeah, I think there's a fair bit of Back to Blood to be enjoyed there, but you need to be in the right frame of mind, like you said, and you need to have the right kind of group that wants to dig into it. I think that the demo beta kind of soured everyone a little bit. Like, I almost feel like if they hadn't had the beta and the game had just dropped, I think more people would have tried it and played a bit more of it. It's just all the news dropping about the card system, and kind of, I think it turned off a lot of people.
That's a pity.
You know, kind of just being like, oh, they're going to monetize this. Oh, yeah, I'm not going to invest time into it because of, you know, this card drop thing. But the actual game isn't really like that at the moment. Like it's got different paths of unlocks for different cards you can work towards. You do have to kind of like arrange your cards on a run and the strategy there about it. So anyway,
do you think that could be a detractor because that's not Left 4 Dead, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, there are things that are so similar to Left 4 Dead that they're not worth mentioning because it's pretty much the same. But and there's a lot of those things that are that are quite good. The weapons, the picking up things between levels and purchasing that kind of loot round. Only having a certain amount of things you can carry, so you don't need to decide, am I taking a health pack out? Am I taking a lock key thing that I might come across a section where I need it? But the cards add on top of that where you're picking a deck of cards, and then as you play each round, you pick one of the cards from that deck that gets added onto the ones that are active. So as you go through the level, you're kind of, you know, you might, some cards you might want to run through the whole thing, so you want to get them in early as possible, and some you realize you're not going to need until later, so that kind of learning process, and also limited by what you've actually unlocked and what you've got in your deck.
Right.
So lots of different, yeah. Anyway, I mean, I feel like it's something I want to play more of. It's just not happening at the moment. Sable, I'll talk about Sable a bit more.
I'd like to try that.
Yeah, I think that it's actually surprisingly, I'm not going to say deep, but
it looks pretty
involving. Yeah, Sable is more involving than it seems at first. It's an indie little game. It's only a couple of gigabytes large. Like, it's not like
it look great on the OLED?
It does look great on the OLED.
Okay.
It looks fantastic.
Sold, done.
It does not have HDR though. And that's it's forgivable from an indie studio.
My relationship with HDR is so weird. Like I find like I said, I have HDR off, the game doesn't support HDR, but I find bits that are super bright. I turn HDR on and I don't know, colors are washed out or they're not right, or I don't know. I've never had a great experience with HDR. So, but then I have these amazing experiences where I think HDR is on and I check and HDR is off. I don't understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, look, a lot of the effect can, when you have a display that has a really high peak brightness, like a lot of people do now, whether that's your HDTV, you know, like your HDR enabled TV or these monitors we're talking about. If you play an SDR title and you just essentially pump the brightness up and you get the contrast and brightness settings correct so that, you know, black isn't too gray and or gray at all, and, you know, white isn't too piercingly bright that you can't look at it, an SDR title can kind of look HDR-ish because you're essentially stretching the dynamic range across a very large few hundred nits there. What HDR should do is keep the SDR thing that you're used to for most of the game should be kind of in that SDR space, and then particular parts of it should like bloom out, like kind of almost jumping out of the screen because they're so bright comparatively to things in the background. So there's a whole thing about color spaces and calibration and things I could go into, but I won't do that now. But yeah, it is a bit of a mess on PC for sure, but on the Series X, which I also managed to get since last episode, surprise news flash, it's very common for games to be HDR enabled on the Series X, compared to their counterparts on PC. And one of the things that I noticed is that Halo Master Chief Collection is not HDR enabled on PC, but it is on the Series X.
Interesting.
So I've continued my campaign attempt to finish all five games, at which I'm only halfway through the first one, before Infinite comes out on Series X now, because they're both plugged into the same TV. You know, of course, I'm going to play the HDR version when it looks as good as it does on my screen now. So, yeah, weird. The reason I bring that up, though, is because there's a feature from Xbox, from Microsoft, called Auto HDR, where for DirectX 11 games, and they have to be kind of ticked off on this list of being enabled, but there's about 1,000 games or something on there. Essentially, it'll apply like a filter to the game that enables it into the HDR dynamic range, as opposed to kind of needing to natively support HDR. So that is a feature that's already on the Xbox One and up, but is also on Windows 11 now, and apparently coming to Windows 10. And I can't find any info about when. So, yeah. So, again, not important for most people. Most people's HDR screens are not, like, there. They're not there any HDR 400 or even HDR 600, you know, just on the border of that. And it's just not an impactful experience.
I thought ours was HDR 600.
Yeah, I mean, the peak brightness of the screens we've got goes to about 700 nits. So it kind of like, it's not HDR at 1000, but it's kind of peaking over the 600 mark. Whereas, except for about three or four of the high-end full array local dimming LED LCD screens, like the Odyssey G7 and 9, the what are those really high-end gamer-branded ones from Asus? And
yeah, some, they're ROG Swifts or something like that.
The ROG ones, yeah, those ones. There's a couple of those that are up there in the 1,000 nit range. You're not going to get 1,000 nits plus out of OLED at the moment. Maybe we'll see, you know, some advances in technology next year, but last year they only managed to get it up from around like under 600 to, you know, mid 700s, or around a 20% increase kind of thing. So, and that's because of this burn-in kind of issue. So it's a technology that'll probably be superseded by either newer OLED technology, or I think micro OLED's been the term I've heard bandied around a bit. And micro LED, or its current form, mini LED. Eventually, we'll be HDR gaming, but we're in the infancy of it now. But it can be glorious. It can be glorious to behold when done right. So anyway, moving on the demo list. Flight Simulator, Microsoft Flight Simulator, Sim Update 6. Did you have a bash of Sim Update 6, George?
I didn't before updating the rig. So, yeah, I can't. I don't have Flight Sim hardware at the moment. But yeah, cool. I'll get back there.
Yeah, I was quite pleased. I was very pleased with the Sim Update 6 unbreaking of things. So, particularly because I fly in VR quite a lot, although less so now with the OLED, because looking at it in HDR can be also enjoyable. Basically night lighting was broken completely, and reflections in VR were broken as well. They fixed both of those things quite dramatically, and the change from, you know, one night pre-patch flying with the headset on at night, you know, and navigating, you're seeing lights everywhere, kind of, you know, cities and towns and roads and things like that. The change back to what it previously kind of did look like earlier on in the release of the sim, that they kind of fucked up. It was dramatic, and it was like quite enthralling to see it again, even though it's kind of what it used to be. It's a weird thing that, like, you can kind of have a game that gets broken now and needs to be fixed again.
Yeah, in a way of our times.
Live service kind of thing. But yeah, Flight Sim, not playing as much as I was, even though it is improved now, mainly because I'm jumping around playing every single thing I can get my hands on. And so, yeah, moving on from Flight Sim, we'll come back to it after the next patch, which
will
be... I
miss Flight Simulator, but
yeah,
it'll be worth it.
There's another patch this month. Yeah, it's a couple of weeks. I think the 18th or 19th or something of this month, November, that there'll be Sim Update 7 and the VR controller support will come along with that. So that could be a good time just to try out all that jazz and jump back into it. Next on my list was Call of the Sea. So this I didn't think I would play. Call of the Sea is a kind of one of those kind of first-person exploration, storytelling, walking simulator type of games. So such as the Edith Finch one. What was that called?
What Remains
of Edith Finch. Yeah. Which I quite liked. I didn't finish, but I did play a few times. Quite a pretty looking game. This is set in like Polynesian islands, and in the 30s, I think, 30s or 40s. And you play a female character who's kind of like gone searching for her partner who went on an expedition. And it's just kind of charming. It's got that same sort of thing where you're kind of wandering through these jungle environments and there's a little puzzle here and there and things to put down and scribble in your notebook and that sort of thing. But it's just, it's kind of, it's got some really calm, chill kind of soundscapes going on with like all the birds and waterfalls and just that kind of outdoory type of feel. And I don't know, I've been jumping in a little bit on the Series X and it looks quite cool as well, the art style that they've kind of done. So Call of the Sea, more interesting than I thought it would be as well, like just in terms of the storyline. So it's keeping me interested. I grabbed Ghost Runner on the GOG. It was Amazon Prime Gaming that gave it away. Yeah. But it was a GOG key. Have you played Ghost Runner?
I haven't played it. I've got it. I claimed all of those things as well, but I haven't installed or played any.
Yeah, so Ghost Runner is like, Mike talked about it a few months back on the podcast, and cyberpunky is all shit kind of version of Mirror's Edge is what I'm thinking of. Mirror's Edge, but with
swords,
with swords, just sword murdering cyberpunkiness. Yeah. And fuck, it's fast too. It's really fast. So I wasn't expecting it to be so visceral. good workout for the HDR ness and the OLED.
That's definitely got ray tracing, I believe.
Does have DLSS and ray tracing and FSR as well. So you shouldn't have any problem getting it running and looking really cool. And it does look really cool. Dramatic vibes, really cool music, like visually just intense. But I have to say, like, I tried it. I don't know if I would go back and try it with keyboard and mouse, but I tried it with the controller at first. And it got really confusing really quickly trying to execute some of these moves. I don't know if it's just one of those ones where I'm not good enough to like learn the controls and get really good at it. Most of the
time when something is fast and visceral, I think I'm not young anymore. I probably won't be able to do this. That is typically one of the things. Yeah.
That's how I feel about it. I'm glad that I got it for free and didn't buy it, put it that way. I read a post on Reddit actually this week where someone was like, it's happened, like I've realized that like what happened while I was playing Doom 2016 and I've just realized that like I just can't do this anymore. Like, I read this guy's article, like his post, and I was like, man, I'm playing Doom 2016 at the moment, and I feel you, bro. I feel you.
Yep.
Happens to us all eventually. Young gamers, take heart. You're really good at games because you have fine motor skills that you'll eventually lose. I actually like feel it. Like I know what I want to do, and like my hands, even with a Elite Series 2 controller for the Xbox, like with its fine motor functions, I just cannot.
Why I don't buy gaming mice anymore? There's no need.
Yeah.
It's not worth my while.
Anyway. All right, moving on. Everspace 2, I already talked about it before, so I'm just going to keep pumping through that one when I've got time. Can be installed. Phoenix Point. So Phoenix Point is very much I feel like a Dave type of game. I'm going to add to this discussion as well, XCOM. I managed to pick up XCOM and War of the Chosen.
Please play XCOM.
Like kind of
play XCOM. Pack.
I think I'm going to go back and play XCOM and come back to Phoenix Point later because Phoenix Point's on Games Pass and it's cool, but I'm more attracted to XCOM. Like, yeah. I own all the old XCOMs and I used to play them a little bit when I was young, but I was never huge.
Just go straight to that.
Straight in War of the Chosen. Okay, cool. Cool, cool. It's good to know from people, from veterans, like, what the best experience will be of something.
Yeah.
So, straight into War of the Chosen.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to go for it. Is there any settings or, like, modes that I should be, like, aware of?
Whatever works for you. You know, if you're hardcore, go hardcore. If you're not hardcore, don't. Like take it seriously when it says, you know, when it says if you're experienced.
Yeah.
don't go in with bravado because it will humble you.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking along the lines of Civilizations like 6 or 5 or whatever. And you, when you go in, you're like, oh yeah, I'm just going to crank it up to like the most hardcore level and give it a go.
Yeah, it's...
And like it'll just smash you in like 15
definitely
minutes.
Definitely not. There are painful lessons to be learned even in the lower difficulties. Painful lessons that you'll learn. Okay. So yeah, don't push it. Just go in thinking I want to enjoy this. That's that.
Sweet. All right. So the Rift Breaker. Dave. This is more for Dave than anyone, I suppose. But yeah, the Rift Breaker looks really pretty, very pretty. Jungle environments. Did you give it a go at all?
No, I just looked at the trailers and the stuff, you know, like because it made a lot. It made a big splash in the review news realm. I saw stuff about Rift Breaker bloody everywhere, so it's hard to avoid. Yeah.
Weird, right? Like I don't know what about this particular game got the marketing right, or just, I don't know, maybe it spent a lot on marketing, I don't know, but definitely I felt that too. I felt like it got more play than perhaps it even deserves, but
possibly, yeah.
not to say that it's not great. Like I'm actually really enjoying it. So action RPG, you know, with base building, with tower defense, with a narrative of going to settle a new planet and then eventually build up your base to, you know, portal back to Earth kind of thing, I suppose the goal. So many systems for upgrading and research and, you know, both for base building but also your mech suit that your character wears. So the suit has an identity and like a vibe, and the player is kind of the opposite of that, or the female protagonist. So she's always like really upbeat about exploring and about finding out about the planet. And your suit guy, Mr. Riggs, is the opposite. And he's always like, we need to prepare. We need to, you know, we need to build more guns. We need to do this. We need to kind of protect ourselves. So yeah, it's a cool dynamic and it has a cool story. Definitely do check out. I definitely went back a few more times to it than I thought, you know, on first play that I would. So it's kind of caught me. Maybe that's why. Maybe reviewers were like, felt the same way as me, and they started playing it, and we're like, this is actually really cool. I'm going to easy to get into as well, like easy to just kind of drop in and power on. If you die, you don't really lose kind of too much, you know, like you kind of get a setback in terms of you're back at your base spawn, like you're for your main spawn, but you might have set up all different bases around with portals between them and stuff. But there could be an attack happening at the time when you die, like, so all of a sudden, like, there's this massive swarm of enemies that are just like it's destroying your base, and you got to like run back there or portal back there and get on to fighting them again.
Right on.
But yeah, good combos. Next up is It Takes Two. Only a couple more to go, but It Takes Two is a co-op title. You've probably seen it. Also got quite a fair bit of review play. I am exclusively playing this with my partner, which means we've played exactly 1 hour of it so far. An hour allotted hour of the week.
To your point earlier about, you know, playing co-op with someone or someones, I think it's important to reserve the gameplay so that you only play at the same time, so that you stay at the same point, same level as you go along. It makes it that much more fun, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we've started doing that with TV shows as well. It's like, yeah, all right, we'll watch two or three episodes of something, and then, like, if you want to go ahead and watch this one yourself, like, you go, I'll just watch it myself separately some other time. Or we're like, no, this is our show. We have to watch it together only. Yeah, so Takes Two has it's cute in the way that you expect it to be, but also handling some like heavy themes with divorce and stuff like that. But I think the fun of it is that you don't need to be particularly skilled at gaming, and it kind of explains itself to you as it's going, and it's kind of that interaction of you both figuring out what you need to do like on the spot. It's usually something quite simple, but it's the process of working out how what you've got to do while they do it, and then combining to kind of make something happen. Yeah, it works. It's a good concept. I wish there was more local co-op games that involved that sort of discovery. That's about it. But It Takes Two. Here's one that is a must play for colorful OLED experiences that just, and it takes the cake of everything that I've put on this screen since I bought it. The Artful Escape. Have you heard of this at all?
Not at all.
Okay. It's a Games Pass drop. I think I saw someone streaming it. Maybe it was Alana Pierce. I'm not sure. And I was like, oh, I need to check that out, because it's about a dude who plays guitar, right? And he's the like nephew of like a folk star, and he's trying to live up to being a folk star himself, and so like kind of like on the eve of his first performance, and he's really like nervous and all that sort of stuff. And then these alien dudes turn up and are like, you need to come with us, like you've got to come and perform. We need someone to fill in the gaps, and all of a sudden you're off on this like adventure of a lifetime where you realize that you're not meant to be a folk guitarist, you're meant to be a shredding, glorious virtuoso cosmic space cowboy. And you spend most of the game just kind of like pressing X to shred and just galloping through these extremely pretty, beautiful landscapes.
It does. It's very colorful.
It's such a good game. I'm not like smiled and just been like, wow, this is so cool. Like the whole time just sitting back, just like, I don't know. It's funny because it's all tongue in cheek. And then there's these little like rhythm games that you do at a few different points, like really short little rhythm things where you're like tapping the same thing as someone else to play along with them or whatever, or to kind of solo. It's very wry humor. It's only about 4 hours in length as well, so it's an easy kind of like 1/2 session thing. But boy, does it look pretty. There is like so many lights, so many. It's like it's if you want to take acid and play this game at the same time, like I'd probably recommend, you know, that as a combination. It's that type of thing, right? It's super cool. Artful Escape. You want to check that out on Games Pass. All right, George, I've cracked. I've jumped back.
Oh dear.
And I've paid almost full price for NBA 2K22.
Oh dear, it happened.
On Series X. Yeah, it happened. It's been, I don't remember paying for full price for an NBA 2K game since 2016, I think, was the last full price one I paid. All the rest has been $15 or less.
So what?
Or free.
What was the, what tipped you over the edge?
So, when it releases, what comes out, like, I just hear this, like, outcry from the community, like, no, don't do this, you broke this, they fucked this up, they did this. And this year, I didn't hear that. And I was like, what? Why is no one complaining? What's going on? And so I started to research and I started to dig in to some of my, like, trusted sources and found a few conflicting views, but generally, like, this kind of, like, positive sentiment. And especially on YouTube, where there's, like, all the haters had disappeared and it just wasn't really, like, a thing at the moment. I was like, wow. Could it be? Could it be the one? And after playing it for the last week or 10 days or so, I think it's pretty accurate. This is actually a pretty good NBA 2K game. I'm not going to say it's a great basketball simulation because there's still things about it that they, you know, are not getting the message on in terms of simulating basketball. But yeah, as a 2K game, like, I feel like they've found a balance on court, moment-to-moment gameplay where you can defend, you can attack, you can hit open shots, you know, with someone who's capable of shooting an open shot from that position. You can kind of get fouled, you can foul people, whereas these type of things in the last few years, especially the last 3 years, have just been like almost absent from the game or just annoying, like annoyingly unfun. And they finally made it fun again. So I'm playing it and it's great. Cool. That's what I have to say about it. All it's right. fun.
Great.
If you want an NBA, if you, yeah.
Like what I was saying about Ghost Recon Breakpoint, as long as you can get, you know, load it up and go, look, I'm having fun, that is all that matters.
I just like basketball games are a thing that I've been playing since I was like 8 years old, maybe younger. And they're one of my favorite little things. Like, I love basketball. I played it in real life for a long, long time. And like, you know, the simulation of the basketball is something that I want to do, especially because I can't play it anymore due to injury. But yeah, like, it's a shame the way that the microtransaction bullshit has infiltrated it all. And I couldn't recommend it for the last few years. If you can handle staying away from microtransactions, you don't want to get, like, you know, you don't want to play modes that are microtransaction heavy. You don't have to. Or if you do want to play them but still have fun without spending any money, you can do that in this game. But I wouldn't put all your eggs in that basket. You know, like, you might find that you get frustrated eventually with the economy of it and stuff like that. But yeah, in terms of the yearly cycle, this is a step in the right direction. So I hope that NBA 2K continues to do the things that they're doing and not break it. So here's the other thing. In 6 months or even in 3 months or 1 month, it's only one patch away from being wrecked again. And they've done this before where they've released it. It's been great. Feedback's been good. And next minute, like, they patch something because everyone's whinging on Twitter, or they patch this to appease some online group and it fucks the simulation offline people and that sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's hope they do that. All right, last on the list and probably the end of tonight's show is Age of Empires 4. So the big release, the dad game of the year, I think. Age of Empires 4 is pretty fun. It's pretty fun. So far, I have not played multiplayer. I have only played single player campaign.
So how much of an advance is it from older Age of Empires? Right.
Okay. Not much, and I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, depending on your angle on it, right? Like, if you want, like, a almost BBC documentary cutscene retelling of history single player, it's pretty cool. It teaches you well. Like, it's very quite clear on the concepts. Which units counter which units, like kind of telling you, you know, what you should be kind of doing, explaining its economies. It takes you through kind of historical retellings while teaching you these things as well, which is cool. Again, I suppose most people will play multiplayer, and that's why I can't really talk about that yet, I suppose. I mean, what would you want to know? I mean, this has been 16 years or something since 3, but everyone still plays 2 and 3, right? Like, they're still, or 2 right. At least.
I think I might have only played 1 or 2. I don't think I know anything about 3.
Well, they did a definitive edition, you know, they remastered them all, and 2 has been the mainstay for the longest time that I can remember. But yeah, look, I don't know. I don't know what to say about it, because it's like, it's great fun so far. It only came out, Thursday last week, so they've only had 4 days with it. And I've been playing other things as well. So, yeah, preliminarily, I would say that it's not bad, but it's not groundbreaking. Like, it's the same thing that you remember. Yep. It's the same. It's just like the artwork's not even like next gen-y as fuck. It's like it's just still
Oh, really?
Looks like Age of Empires. Yeah, it just looks like Age of Empires in 4K, you know, looks good. It's not something to write home about though. It's like the units aren't, I mean, they said this. They said they were gonna do it inspired by the previous titles.
Yeah.
So they wanted to keep a visual and design consistency through the previous titles to this one with such a massive gap in between. They didn't want to change it too much. But honestly, like, I feel like maybe they were a little too tame with it. They could have.
You know, back in the day, when Netgamer was in its earliest incarnations, I think we didn't even have an ADSL or what we had SDSL connection at the time. We might not have even had that yet. We used to have a bunch of guys who would drive up from Wollongong to Sydney, and they would take up our entire back room and play Age of Empires and play big epic games of Age of Empires. And then when they concluded their game, they would all gather around one machine and rewatch the replay of the entire bloody game, and they'd talk about stuff, and they'd zoom around the map, and they'd talk about, you know, oh yeah, so what was going on here, and then oh yeah, I was look, check this out, I was sneaking around here and doing this, and oh my god, I was wondering why all of that fit stuff was happening out there. It was really interesting. Like you know, I'd never played games, you know, it that kind of game in that kind of way. But it is wonderful to see how different people enjoy different kinds of games.
Do you watch replays of your races or other people's races? I mean, you watch your streams back, I suppose, sometimes. Or
I do watch my streams back, I'll tell you, for the longest of times, from Gran Turismo to Gran Turismo 1 to Gran Turismo 4, from Forza Motorsport 2 through to Forza Motorsport 7, I would drive a car and I would watch a replay. I would drive a car and I would watch a replay just because the replays were so epic, the sounds, you know, watching the cars and just thinking, wow, I did that. Dirt Rally 2 replays are wonderful to watch, but I don't get to watch replays anywhere near as much as I used to. But I love replays of car games. I absolutely adore replays of driving.
Just to see, like, to kind of improve your own driving skill, or just to look at?
Just to look at.
Yeah.
So, well, sometimes it's to understand why something didn't go right.
Yes.
You know, okay. Like, yeah. What came the in, came hell into the corner too there? Wide. Why on earth did I not make that? Or did I hit something? Was there something weird in the track that caused that to happen? That will spur a replay when I don't understand what happened.
Absolutely. People have been asking for flight sim replay functionality, because it's something that's been in all other flight sims for some reason.
Yes.
And we'll get a beta version.
There are third party tools, right?
There is a mod that apparently does it, but it doesn't in a real weird way.
Yeah.
So this upcoming patch should have the what they use to make their own videos should like.
You know, oh, that'll be awesome.
Yeah, which like they did describe as being a bit like rough around the edges in terms of UI and stuff, but they were like, let's just put it in and then we'll improve it like later. But people want it so bad, we'll just give it to them. Anyway, so. This is the thing though. Like, I don't. What are you just going to watch your takeoffs and your landings? Like, how much of the. I'm supposed to make content, it'd be cool, but like, in terms of enjoyment, like, I don't really see a flight replay adding outside of takeoffs and landings. I don't know, I could be wrong. Maybe it's just horses for courses, right? I'm just trying to like find why I would watch a replay of my flight other than the landing.
I think there are moments, and particularly if you were to do some multiplayer stuff, there would be moments that you'd love to capture.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose multiplayer, definitely. All right, well, let's wrap it up. That was a long episode. There was a lot of games, yep. So thanks for hanging around, sticking with us. We lost Dave halfway through there, but. Such is life. We'll try and get back on our regular schedule. I know we say this every time, and then we keep missing dates. But it's that time of year. You know, it's hard to get this to happen. It's hard to get this recording going. So November games. Just quickly, upcoming couple of highlights. I think we've got Forza Horizon 5 is something we're probably both excited about on November 9th. So. A week away.
November 5 for me, thanks.
Oh, Call of Duty. Oh, for you, you're an early
access. Early adopter. I'm taking Friday and Monday off, so my entire weekend is going to be Forza Horizon 5.
Nice. Are you going to be upping your streaming?
Yeah, I'll be
sessions.
It'll probably be in YouTube rather than Twitch. But I'm probably going to be sat there streaming. And driving and streaming and driving.
Sick.
Can't wait.
Cool. I'll try and join you for what do they call it? A group or a posse? Or
if you have a convoy. If you have early access.
No, I don't. I won't.
But this is going to be a long-term thing for me anyway. So.
Yeah.
Imagine.
Call of Duty Vanguard's in there on November 5th as well. I don't think I'll be playing that one, but you never know. Animal Crossing New Horizons update also comes out that day. It's a pretty big one for Switch players. There's a Just Dance coming out in a couple of days as well. Just Dance 2022. That's a series I've not checked in a long, long time. I want to know, do I need peripherals for Just Dance 2022?
Hey, Skyrim Special Edition? What?
Yeah. So November 11th, right? November 11th, you can go and buy Grand Theft Auto 3, Skyrim, and Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic.
But releases. That's only on Switch.
Yes, but like, still, what year is it? Like, Grand Theft Auto Trilogy is something I'm actually looking forward to. I know they've only done the bare Bones basics in terms of bringing those back to life, but like I will play them. Skyrim Special Edition is a 10-year anniversary.
So what's special about it? There already was an enhanced edition, right?
Yeah, there already was enhanced edition. So you've got me there. I know there's fishing. I know that's in there, and I don't think that was in special edition.
I think I heard something along the lines of they were. No, I won't. I don't think I heard anything.
I'm going straight to the source, and seeing what they've got there, because yeah, the listeners need to know. They can't be bothered googling this. London Symphony Orchestra. Oh, they're doing Skyrim in concert. Definitely check that out on Twitch and YouTube. God, yeah, I don't know. They're not really like selling it in terms of what's in there. They're just saying like. They're just saying that it's just coming out again. Just buy it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you've bought it how many times now? Like, I've bought it at least twice.
Well, hey, at least Microsoft Flight Simulator Game of the Year Edition is a free update to people who already have it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah. That's a thank you, I think.
Yeah.
We weren't there with everything and... also Reno Air Races, the multiplayer edition, which is going to be interesting.
Agree.
To say the least. The flight sim on the 18th. Battlefield 2042, a disaster waiting to happen, or the turnaround of the year. Let's find out on the 19th. Cricket 22 is the only other one I highlighted there. official Game of the Ashes on the 25th. And then we're into December.
Oh my god, is Kid Amnesia the Radiohead thing?
Yes, the Kid A. Kid A Amnesia. Yeah.
I've got a PS5. Is that going to be my first PS5 game?
I hope so. I hope it's the reason you unbox your PS5 is to visualize Kid A / Amnesia. Oh my god. Yeah, that's a weird one. Why haven't you unboxed your PS5?
I've been building a rig for 12 days. Maybe I will. I don't know. I've got lots of stuff to play. If I unbox it, I'd probably give it to my missus so she can play Genshin Impact. Because if I keep it for myself, I'll probably fall down the rabbit hole of Final Fantasy VII Remake, and that would just consume way too much of my time. So. No thanks. No. Stay away.
So I didn't mention this before, but I actually have been playing Final Fantasy 1 on SNES emulation. So when you do get around to it, we can chat about that.
Cool.
Are you still going to sell me your old rig, by the way? Are we still doing that?
I just got this one done. I need to do some work to make the old rig, to restore it to functional state. So
I just wasn't sure how everything was going there. If you were like, I need to get rid of it.
I need to get rid of it, but I need to make it good because it's still attached to an old motion platform and I need to take that off and put the regular base on. And there's some work ahead. That's all.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Cool. All right. No worries. All right, cool. Thanks, guys. Thanks for sticking with us this long. Cheers, George. Appreciate it.
Same.
And check out Raindancer AU on Twitch and YouTube and all the socials. And you can find us here on the Eternal Beta Podcast at gmail.com, eternalbetapodcast.com, Eternal Beta Pod on Twitter. I think that's pretty much it these days. So hit us up, and the Discord will be there. We'll be there most of the time. Chatting, if not on voice, but see you there.
Yeah.
Catch you later.